This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Second hour of the program coming up in about 15 minutes from now. We're going to hear from Frank Schwab. Would love to get Frank's thoughts on what's going to happen not only in Week 18 of the National Football League season, but also his thoughts on the vitriolic discourse around most valuable player and who's going to win this thing. We'll see exactly what he thinks, what's going to happen there and this week in the National Football League. But I think I always like to talk about the ripple effects of a lot of these games that we see. And we always talk about, I think, the low-hanging fruit, and it's easy to see that. But one of the things that is a very big topic of conversation now coming out of that game last night for Monday Night Football between the Los Angeles Rams and the Atlanta Falcons is Offensive Player of the Year. Quietly last night, as everybody was getting their pitchforks out and swords were clashing over whether or not Drake May should be minus 400 to win MVP, Jaxon Smith-Njigba got to as high as minus 340 to win Offensive Player of the Year. Now, on the surface, some would say that there was only one Offensive Player of the Year candidate to win this award in that game, Puka Nacua. He is currently 11-1, 5 receptions last night, 47 yards, a touchdown, and three near catches that would have been brilliant for him. One that was actually a catch but was called back, and two, one on the left sideline when he made a diving attempt for it that he could not get it, and of course, the one that everybody's going to remember that was knocked out of his hands, which was an incredible effort near the end of that game on the final drive for Los Angeles to give them a chance at a field goal. Having said that, coming out of yesterday, I do think we should, and I think a lot on the network have and will continue to do, so it's not a common or a unique thought at this point. And Mitch Moss and I, by the way, covered it on Pod to the Futures, which will be out later today if you want to check that out as well, is Bijan Robinson's candidacy for Offensive Player of the Year. You know, I think there's a lot of minutiae, and when you talk about these, you know, the yards, the numbers, I know Gil and Kelly earlier today did the blind resume, kind of splitting up what he looked like in terms of receiving yards and rushing yards. I just broke it down in terms of total yards from scrimmage for Bijan Robinson, but it's easy enough to say that Robinson, fewer touches, more yards from scrimmage. In fact, he leads the league in yards from scrimmage at 2,255. He averages 6.5 yards per touch and 11 total touchdowns, 6 behind Christian McCaffrey, who is well above him for Offensive Player of the Year. I think that ultimately we'll get to a point where this is one of those, is it right to take 100-1 on Bijan Robinson to win this thing, just considering that he'll probably get more first-place votes than you think he will? That might be the case. So is there theoretical value in Bijan Robinson 100-1 to win Offensive Player of the Year? I think there is. That's worth adding. Some spots are at 60. The 100-1s are out there at spots like DraftKings. I think that this is worth adding, though, to the account, considering how he stacks up with some of his contemporaries here. And the fact that a few books don't even have him listed, despite the fact that he is going to push Saquon Barkley's record last year for total yards from scrimmage, that is something that I think will not be missed by voters. And I don't think that just because he has, let's even say he scores 2 next week, and he only has 2 touchdowns, and that's actually asking a lot if he scored 2 touchdowns in a single game. If he's only got 13 total touchdowns, I don't know if that would hold him back enough if we're talking about a record season in which you're setting this in terms of total yards from scrimmage. So it's just worth adding here. I also think it's incredible as we look at these odds for Offensive Player of the Year that Jonathan Taylor at 150-1, if I told you minutes after that game in Germany against Atlanta that Jonathan Taylor was going to be 150-1 at one point to win Offensive Player of the Year, you would look to me like I was insane. But that's how quickly these seasons change and what exactly is going to happen here. But Robinson, I think ultimately, coming out of last night, you've got to think that if you're a voter, if you had a vote and you took this seriously, you would look at every aspect of these guys' resume. And my assumption would be you would take Bijan Robinson more seriously as a candidate for Offensive Player of the Year than what the betting market is telling you that he is being considered. It's probably still Jaxon Smith-Njigba at this point right now, but I always think we tend to lean on these odds as our barometer for which we measure these guys' chances, and I understand that because that's what the betting market is, but when it comes to awards, we have a lot of different indicators that we have no idea what these voters are thinking. The most famous one, of course, at least that I keep coming back to, is Paul Skenes and Jackson Merrill, NL Rookie of the Year. Jackson Merrill gets to minus 1,000 to win the award. and Paul Skeens gets 23 of, I think, the 30 first place votes or whatever it was. I know Skeens, I think Merrill only got 7 for sure. Didn't come close to winning the award. The market had no idea. And so I say this because I don't know if the market has any clue that Bijan Robinson isn't even being considered. When we read the clip from Florio just, 30 minutes ago to Stormy, he's considering Christian McCaffrey for most valuable player, at least according to himself. A plurality of voters might not vote for Christian McCaffrey to win it, but one of 50 is going into Week 18 with Christian McCaffrey on his list, short or long, to an MVP, and yet those odds don't reflect that, and I think that could be the same here for Offensive Player of the Year. So let's get to some news in the National Football League and what we're looking at for the day as we head closer to Week 18 and some of the news that's come down. We did get clarification today from the Los Angeles Chargers. The Denver Broncos will not face Justin Herbert. Trey Lance will get the start against those Broncos. Jim Harbaugh, said that there's likely to be other starters who won't play in Denver, but those decisions will be made later in the week. Quote, we'll see how the rest of the week goes, who all they are. There will be some situations where some starters are backups. That's what Harbaugh told the media earlier today, or yesterday. I think it was earlier today. But either way, you look at what Harbaugh has done here. This season's been great. They know the writing on the wall. I think the interesting part about this, as we again look at the dynamic of team needs to win to achieve something, team has nothing to play for, so bumping this up. Now, some of this line move, of course, is because of the change at quarterback. However, when you get to these games, you can only go so deep on a roster when you're talking about letting guys get a little bit of a reprieve when it comes to some of these rests in the Week 18 situations. And so you do wonder when, at some point, does the line get too far ahead for the Denver Broncos? Again, it's one-off, but we'll just say we've seen them scuffle with teams like the Raiders on a Thursday night. So let's not act like this is a team that's infallible in terms of blowing out opponents. And Bo Nix has been pretty solid down the stretch. I think a lot of his numbers have been buoyed by the fact that he had his best game, I would argue, of his career against the Green Bay Packers a few weeks back. But if you look going back over the last few weeks for Bo Nix, if you exclude Week 15, we're talking about 66% completion, 6.5 yards per attempt, 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. The whole point here being is not, hey, anti-Bo Nix, this guy can't win. It's just he's not really playing at this incredible, mind-melting level that I'm going to assume that this offense can go out there and help the Broncos achieve winning by such a margin against the Los Angeles Chargers. I'd be curious to see if this gets all the way up to that 14 on the news that we have with the Los Angeles Chargers, and also depending on what we hear from Los Angeles when it comes to who's starting, who's not, who's resting outside of just Justin Herbert. But we already have an instance, and you see the ATS records there. The Broncos have been a team that have been overvalued by the betting market all season long, and now with all of this baked into it, maybe we're going to get to a point where we're still a little too high for the Denver Broncos in this situation against the Los Angeles Chargers. Other news that we have, Indianapolis Colts make it official. Riley Leonard is expected to start against Houston. Texans opened up a 9.5-point favorite with a total of 40. This number right now sitting at Houston currently laying somewhere, let me see this, right now 10.5, total 38.5 or 39, and I would expect that maybe this continues to climb. This is one situation where, again, Texans have something on the line. They win. Jacksonville loses. They can take the AFC South. This, though, I think is a little bit different. Riley Leonard, a quarterback that, while Tim Murray has told me many times, he won the Manning Passing Academy many years ago, I think against a defense like this would probably struggle mightily and allow the Texans to win by this margin only because this defense is so good and so opportunistic, as we saw in a matchup with the Los Angeles Chargers again, that this is going to be a group that could maybe cover this number only because of what the Colts are working with at quarterback. Much better quarterbacks have struggled greatly against this Texans team. And putting Riley Leonard out there, yes, with a week of practice, but with a limited arm that I think is going to have some issues here against Houston, I think you're going to be in a tough spot if you're Indianapolis. We'll see. Steichen has done pretty good things with backup quarterbacks, as we have seen. He took Gardner Minshew to within a drop pass of the postseason. That drop pass occurred against this Texans team 2 years ago. But I do think that this is a situation where you look at a really limited quarterback and a passing attack that's been scuffling a little bit here over the last couple of weeks, some of which is due to the fact that their quarterback was physically limited. Maybe you see Leonard run the ball a little bit more, especially in a negative game state. Look for some rushing yard props for Riley Leonard, considering that he'll be dropping back more, trying to escape some pressure, maybe using his legs a little bit. Maybe there might be some design runs as well as you're trying to empty the tank in the last game of the season. But I would expect that this continues to climb. Maybe you see some betters at 10.5. It'll be interesting, too, this is a little different because, of course, it's Riley Leonard. But remember, two straight weeks now, the market has one-way traffic supported Indianapolis at the window. Did it against Jacksonville? Did it against San Francisco on Monday night? Maybe that was a Pro Rivers thing, but it didn't work out both times. So I do wonder if this is going to work out here against the Houston Texans. With that, other bit of news that we have coming out of the NFL, and I think this is more about what we're going to expect potentially from some of these other teams, but the Green Bay Packers in a really interesting situation. They take on the Minnesota Vikings. Vikings open up 6.5 with a total of 37. Right now it's sitting some spots 5.5, but mostly 6.5, 6 with a total of 35.5 or 36.5. I thought these were pretty telling comments from Matt LaFleur. Quote, nothing's been decided. It was a tough lesson a year ago in regards to what we lost going into the wild card round, end quote. That's, of course, in reference to losing Christian Watson in a game that didn't really mean anything for Green Bay except for seeding. Find yourself in a similar situation here. You're locked into the seventh seed, and both Jordan Love and Malik Willis dealing with their own issues. We know that Love missed the last game. Willis leaves the last game with the shoulder issue once again. I would assume that this is one where Green Bay, probably because of the lessons they learned, as LaFleur said last season, are probably not going to really care about this contest. Having said that, I know Brian Flores is great, and technically Flores, this has been the talk, the contract, will Minnesota retain him? Will he be a candidate for some of these jobs, and will he be able to go get money elsewhere as the defense coordinator because he's done a brilliant job this season? He's going to be putting his best foot forward to maybe show a lot of these other teams that he is worth paying and outbidding Minnesota for. Going to get a good effort from this defense. What does this offense look like for Minnesota? Let's take a break, and when we come back, Frank Schwab will join us. We'll get his thoughts on what Week 18 has in store for us and who will win this MVP race. So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools. But what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. VSiN Pro gives you access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
New Year's Eve coming up and New Year's Day as well. You might have the day off, but we're going to be here. We have full, regular programming both days, starting with VSiN by the books at 7, rolling through a numbers game, prop points. This show, Money Moves, Follow the Money, VSiN Primetime, and cashing out deep into the night as you're counting down to 2026 and kicking off the new year. VSiN is going to be right there with you, real-time betting coverage across all sports, college football playoff, NFL, NBA, and more. So spend your new year with VSiN, the nonstop home for sports bettors. We continue our programming here today. Let's head out to the Progressive guest line and waste no time welcoming Frank Schwab, who was nice enough to give us a couple of minutes. We have a lot to get to in the National Football League, awards, Week 18, and more. So let's discuss it. Joins us via the Progressive guest line. Frank, thank you very much. So let's just start. I have to start with last night. Everybody's talking about it. Drake May, now minus 400 to win Most Valuable Player. Surely that's a shocking price.
It is a little shocking that it's that much of a wrap, but it kind of is a wrap now. I always had in the back of my mind that there are a lot of voters who were just going to take Drake May because they won the division. If you go back, a wild card quarterback has not won MVP since 2008. Voters are very specific when it comes to this. They're going to vote for a quarterback, and they're going to vote for a quarterback off of a division winner. And that's been the pattern for most of the last two decades. And so when Stafford lost on that Thursday night against Seattle and kind of ruined their shot of winning the NFC West, I immediately thought Stafford's going to have an uphill battle with a lot of these voters. And then, you know, kind of the confirmation bias kicks in. Well, he threw three interceptions on Monday Night Football. It's got to go to Drake May now. He just threw five touchdowns. Voters very, very cognizant of what happened most recently instead of seeing, you know, I mean, the games in September count too. But we see that in all sports. I remember when your Chipper Jones won MVP with a blazing September. So it's not like this is a new phenomenon, but what happens last often matters most in the MVP voting. So May has that on his side. May has the fact that he did win a division on his side. Yeah, I think Drake May takes this award, even though I think Matthew Stafford's still a fine pick. Yes, he had a tough game last night, but he's had a great season. I would have no problem with anybody voting for Matthew Stafford. Honestly, I'd have no problem with anybody voting for Josh Allen because he's the best player I've seen week in and week out. But it seems right now that Drake May's winning that thing.
So big picture, and you know, this is always, you ask these questions that are never going to get solved anyway, but you know, you mentioned when you saw that they lost that game to Seattle, that maybe that was going to be kind of the dagger in the side for Stafford's MVP candidacy because they were going to get boxed out for the division. Don't we have a problem with MVP voting if a guy can't win an award because his team gave up a punt return for a touchdown and his defense couldn't hold off one of the weirdest two-point conversions we've ever seen?
Absolutely. Jonathan, look, last year, what did the MVP voting come down to? It came down to, I swear this happened, and you know this too, it came down to a debate of, well, whose teammates are worse? What are we doing here? What, we really decided MVP last year based on who had the worst teammates? Not who's the best player. The best quarterback in the NFL is Lamar Jackson. The same MVP voters told you, we think Lamar Jackson's the best quarterback in football because he was the all-pro quarterback. And then they said, well, we think kind of Josh Allen has worse teammates, so we're going to give it to him that way. I will never get over that. I cannot wrap my head around it. And we see it. Look, there's a lot of things that go into MVP voting that I don't agree with. Nikola Jokic should have 5 straight MVPs. There's no question about that in my mind. But voters said, well, we don't really want to put Jokic in the 4 MVP club yet, so let's give one to Embiid. Let's give one to Shea. It's ridiculous. It is. And I think last year, a lot of it was, we don't want to give Lamar 3 before we give Josh 1. So let's do these mental gymnastics to figure out a way where we can justify giving Josh Allen the award over Lamar Jackson, even though we just said Lamar Jackson was a better player all year. So yes, MVP is it's flawed in many ways, and I dislike it because that's the history of the game we're talking about. We are talking, when we go back, you know, 20, 25 years from now, and we say, well, you know, Matthew Stafford never won an MVP. How great was he? Should he be the 20th best quarterback of all time? That stuff matters in these debates, which I probably spend too much time worrying about it.
Yeah. By the way, that was the example I was going to bring up. You had voters actually saying in the NBA, Joel Embiid hasn't won one yet, and that's my tiebreaker, which I wanted to pull my hair out. And I had a shaved head that year, and I was willing to just rip all the hair out there. Frank Schwab with us. Follow him on Twitter, at Yahoo Schwab, discussing everything MVP and a little bit further. I wanted to zoom out a little bit because I brought this up. You know, we're talking so much about the MVP. In reality, the Rams are 2-3 in their last 5 games. The run defense has looked a little shaky in a couple of those contests. So big picture with the Rams, are we worried? They were the favorite at one point. Now they are not. It is Seattle. What do you make of what we've seen in this late season falter from Los Angeles?
Yeah, and I don't downgrade them that much, but you have to a little bit. I mean, they were killing the Seahawks in week 16. I mean, it just was one of the weirdest final 8 minutes of regulation and overtime I've ever seen. And so I don't want to ding them that much for it. I don't think they had a ton to play for last night. Like, we could sit here and say, oh, the 5 seed's really important because you want to face the NFC South. It's another thing for Sean McVay to go into that locker room and convince his guys how important it is. Like, they knew. Like, we can't win a division anymore. You're really going to get up for a road game against Atlanta when they're playing on Monday night and can still, you know, impress everybody. So I just thought that was a flat spot in their schedule. I had the Falcons money line last night because of that, because I just felt like the Rams were going to come out a little bit flat, and they did. So I don't want to push them down too far, because I still think there's a quality team. Really misses Davante Adams, especially in the red zone. They'll get him back, I assume, for the playoffs. But the road gets a lot tougher. Look, Seattle, if Seattle wins on Saturday, or the 49ers, you got 2 home games to a Super Bowl. Well, the Rams got to probably go on the road 3 times to make a Super Bowl. It's just night and day, the difference in those paths. So I think the Rams have a much tougher path, obviously, especially if they don't get the 5 seed and they get the 6. That's a big, big difference, because the NFC South, they'd be double-digit favorites over the NFC South, I assume. So I don't want to discount the Rams, but yeah, it's a lot tougher for them now than it was 2 weeks ago.
All right, well, let's talk about that, because I know the way that you're leaning, at least with this Saturday night game, that they'll have a shot at getting the 5 seed, the Rams, that is, because Seahawks, 1.5-point favorites, total of 50 over San Francisco. You like Seattle here?
I do. I just think they're a better team. And look, the 49ers are one of those teams that's just going to mess with me all season, because I sit there and I say, that defense ain't good enough to win a championship. I respect what they're doing. They have done so much with their injury situation. I've said over and over and over, Kyle Shanahan's not just the coach of the year. He should win coach of the year almost unanimously. And he's one of the best coaching jobs I've seen in the last decade. Like, it is unbelievable that even anybody else's favorite over Kyle Shanahan right now is coach of the year. That said, that defense is terrible. They can't stop anybody. Are you telling me they're going to win a Super Bowl? But they keep winning. I've said that, and now they're 13-3. So they're obviously figuring it out. But I think Seattle's the best team in football. And even on the road, I think they go in. And they got their issues of their own. Not saying they don't, but I like their defense. I think that they could take advantage of that San Francisco offense or that San Francisco defense. I do think they get a key road win. And we know Mike McDonald is just a beast on the road. I don't know what secret sauce he's figured out, but he is a really, really good coach when it comes to road games.
So you mentioned the Shanahan dynamic. Do you think other voters feel like that? Like, do you think they see this with Shanahan and expect that this is going to be it? Because obviously the low-hanging fruit is the Patriots are going to grab an MVP, and they might have a coach of the year as well, considering what they've done, despite also an easy schedule.
Another formula vote, coach of the year. I always bring up this example. The coach of the year is broken. It's just broken. We base it on, well, this team exceeded its preseason expectations the most. Well, what if preseason expectations were just wrong? Like, we're just wrong about those teams. This is my favorite example. ACC men's basketball coach of the year. In Coach K's final 22 seasons, he never won ACC men's basketball coach of the year. You're telling me that the greatest college basketball coach of all time was not the best coach in the ACC in any of his last 22 seasons? Like, come on, what are we doing here? So I do think it's just going to be look how much the Patriots improved with Mike Vrabel, without really acknowledging that, yeah, Jared Mayo set the bar so low that Mike Vrabel couldn't help but be better than that. I shouldn't ding Kyle Shanahan because he's been really good for the last 5-6 years. Kyle Shanahan has established a baseline with the 49ers where they're a really good team year in and year out. But you look at what they've dealt with the injuries, Purdy, Kittle, Trent Williams, IU, Jennings, Pearsall, Bosa, Warner, Michael Williams, their top pick. They've missed all of these guys and still are 13-3. A ridiculous coaching job, and I do not think he's going to win Coach of the Year.
I mean, I couldn't agree more. When you talk about making cases for Coaches of the Year, I brought this up to Mitch Moss, our cohort, to do a podcast on with here. How do we not talk about DeMeco Ryans and that defense carrying this offense over the course of this entire season to this winning streak, and the fact that they still might win the AFC South? That's not even considered, even though I think what he's done with that team is one of the more brilliant coaching jobs that we've seen this year.
Absolutely. He's been great. Mike McDonald. McDonald has done wonders with that defense, and they're probably going to have the best record in the NFL. Sean Payton. Sean Payton has not been mentioned once. Why not? Why should we penalize him because they were a pretty good team last year? They're the best team. If they have the best record in the AFC, didn't Sean Payton have a lot to do with that? I mean, so it just doesn't – it strikes me. Before the year, I looked at this. The two coaches with the worst coach of the year odds were Andy Reid and Nick Sirianni, the two coaches that just came off of the Super Bowl. Think about that for a second. Think about how broken that award is when the two coaches who just met in the Super Bowl had the worst odds to win Coach of the Year this year.
All right, follow him on Twitter at Yahoo Schwab, NFL Sports Betting for Yahoo Sports. Appreciate it, Frank. Rub against it, but thank you very much. Happy New Year, and good luck this week.
Absolutely appreciate it.
Got it. I couldn't agree more. I mean, there's so many good coaching jobs. If you actually look at the nuance of so many of these dudes and the things they've done for their team, hell, I would even throw Kellen Moore in the situation and in that conversation. Getting Tyler Shuck into that lineup and turning this around and getting them to maybe close out on a win streak the way that they are. There's a lot of nuance to these coaches of the year. So Mike Vrabel, $1.40 favorite right now, the odds-on favorite, followed by Kyle Shanahan, who has risen up the ranks as we've discussed it every single week. Let's take a break, and on the other side, big news, figuratively and literally, in the association, we now have a massive favorite to win MVP.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
ProfitX, the number one sports prediction market, has some of the best future pricing you'll find on college football national championship and Super Bowl odds. With a huge holiday slate shaping playoff seating, now's the perfect time to get in and take advantage of ProfitX's 20% purchase match. Download ProfitX today and experience the future of winning. Use promo code VSIN to get started. Back here on Money Moves, 30 minutes away from the start, of course, of Follow the Money, which will be part of our normal programming here and part of the New Year's Eve and Day programming. Big news, though. So this is not the big news, figuratively and literally, that I had mentioned going out, but it is worth noting a day of celebration if you are, like me, an Angels fan. Anthony Rendon. How about this? He has been bought out. Time with the Angels is over. They agreed to defer the final 1 year, $38 million of his contract over the next 3 to 5 years. How about this stat from Spotrac? Is it SpotRack or Spotrac? I never really know how you actually pronounce his website. Either way, great contract website for those who don't know. I'm sure all of you do. Anthony Rendon, active for 257 of a possible 1,032 games for the Angels. 895 plate appearances over that span. He took in $887,654 per game in per game active, $254,890 per plate appearance. Good job, man. If you can get it done, I guess you can get it. But now the time with the Angels is done. I will not say the things that people are saying. I'll just say, you know what? Good for Anthony Rendon. With that, the opposite of Anthony Rendon, I mean, I guess I would actually argue that Nikola Jokic cares as much about basketball as Anthony Rendon does about baseball. It's just that Jokic is so good that it doesn't really matter. But last night, pretty big news for the Denver Nuggets and for the association as Nikola Jokic suffers a knee injury. We get the news today per Shams Charania and others. He has been diagnosed with a hyperextension in his left knee. He will miss about 4 weeks. This is going to be a very big deal because the month gone now, it's two different things here. You know, we head down two paths. For the Denver Nuggets, it's a team that has been now ravaged by injuries. Four of their top starting five are now out. We know that Aaron Gordon's been out. We know that Christian Brown's been out. We know that now Nikola Jokic is out too. And we just got word a couple of days ago, Cam Johnson with this knee, it was right before Christmas. He is going to be out for an extended period of time as well. So this Nuggets team, insanely thin now, and are probably going to take a massive hit in the standings with where they're currently at. Now, they do have quite a bit of leeway built up just because of how good their record is and because, of course, how good Jokic has been. Currently the 3 seed at 22-10, but not that much separates 3 from even 7 at this point right now. So Denver Nuggets, at least in a month, might be flirting with a play-in spot and will have to dig themselves out of a hole. Big picture, this is always what you're looking for, the ebbs and flows of a season. Given the fact that they are injured, that does suck. But given the timelines that we know, one would expect if things go right for them in terms of their recovery for all of these players, that this team will be, should be healthy by the time we get to the postseason. I will be, and I think a lot of people should be too, looking for a buy low opportunity in this futures market for the Denver Nuggets if they continue to slide down the standings, knowing and assuming that these guys are all going to come back, will be healthy, and this will look like a team that on paper and at times throughout the times they were healthy looked like they could push those teams like the Houston Rockets, like the Oklahoma City Thunder, who now look a little bit more mortal, and of course like the San Antonio Spurs. So keep that in mind as the Denver Nuggets, from that perspective, taking a big loss with Nikola Jokic. From the MVP standpoint now, this opens up a really fascinating conversation for this award. With this injury, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, now the odds-on favorite at a very heavy price to win most valuable player. DraftKings has him at minus 450. Luka Doncic is the second choice at plus 370. Then you get into the double digits and well into the double digits. Cade Cunningham at 50-1. Jalen Brunson at 60-1. Victor Wembanyama at 60-1 as well. The worry there being is that is he going to play enough games? He's already missed enough games, he's already missed a stretch of games that you really need him to play a vast majority of contests as we move forward into this year, well over 50, and not miss about 6, that he's going to be able to win this award. Maybe he will be able to do that. Jaylen Brown, also the sexy name that's been thrown out there. The Celtics have been absolutely incredible, given the expectations before the season started. Now 19-12, 4.5 games back of Detroit for the number one seed in the Eastern Conference. Brown himself has had a very strong year this season. So the question now becomes for this team, can the Celtics, with Jaylen Brown averaging 29.7 points, 6.3 rebounds, 4.8 assists, if they steal a top two seed in the Eastern Conference, would that be enough without a guy like Jason Tatum to give him the award? And I think that's probably the right path to go down in terms of finding somewhere else to get this award. But I don't know if it's the right Eastern Conference team. And I do wonder, if you're looking at the way this is breaking down right now, if just the two guys that are behind Doncic and Shai are really the guys to back here at this point right now. That being Cade Cunningham and Jalen Brunson. When it comes to Brunson, he's averaging 29.4 points per game. The rebounds aren't there, 6.6 assists, shooting 47% from the floor. He's in the top 7 in terms of scoring and points per game. If Brunson ends up playing enough contests and leads the Knicks to the one seed in the Eastern Conference over the Detroit Pistons, he's got the backing of the brand. He plays for the Knicks. The numbers would be there. And when it comes to these awards, we talk about this all the time. Frank Schwab had a really great breakdown on this in terms of just these weird things that voters do, these odd walls that they build up, these parameters that they establish. We've talked about that with most improved a ton. The fact that second-year players, for whatever reason, cannot win it. The fact that 2 years ago, Victor Wembanyama could not win Defensive Player of the Year because he was a rookie and voters just didn't want to give it to him, even though statistically there was a case to be made. He was the best defensive player. Voters will do these things. I bring that up because Shea Gilgeous-Alexander did win MVP a season ago, and the voters will make this weird arbitrary bar that he has to surpass because last year he was brilliant. Can he surpass those numbers this year? And if not, will a season like this from Brunson of near 30 points and 6 assists with a 1 seed for the Knicks be enough to take that from him? Will Cade Cunningham, who right now has a very strong season, he's shaping himself. He is behind by about 6 points from Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in terms of scoring. However, he's beating him in rebounds, beating him in assists. He's shooting 46% from the floor, which is a fine clip at this point given his usage. And his team could be the 1 seed at 50-1. Is, I think, that worth adding here for Cade Cunningham? And there's just the whole overall aspect of, will Shea play enough games? It's not that he has shown a penchant for missing these games, but we don't know what's going to happen. The Thunder, before the start of this season, were wildly lucky when it came to games lost due to injury. And it's going to be incredible to see whether or not that will keep up for some of their star players. Jalen Williams already missed time at the beginning of the year. But I do think that, at the very least, when you look at some of these long shots and the way that voters tend to handle repeat MVPs, especially in the NBA, I do think there's going to be this weird thing where there's going to be a resistance to try to give it to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander only because of what he achieved a season ago, and that opens the door for guys like Cade Cunningham and Jalen Brunson. Should note, too, the name that has not been mentioned here, the second choice to win Most Valuable Player, Luka Doncic, who is sitting in the range of plus 350 to win this thing right now, currently plus 370 over at DraftKings. I think that Doncic, you know, it is incredible. It's almost Stafford-esque in the sense of, and Luka Doncic is nowhere near the end of his career. He could still win an MVP. But if you were to think that Stafford had won an MVP, you would think, yeah, I mean, given his, given the way he is thought of as a player, surely he's had one. But if he doesn't win this year, he's not going to have one. And it's the same thing with Luka Doncic. The reality is he hasn't really come insanely close to winning one of these most valuable players. Some of it's due to injury. Some of it's due to some other strong seasons. Luka, at least right now, I think is starting to fall out of favor once again. We've had these conversations at his time in Dallas, and now this has really started to pick up again, especially when on a national scene in Christmas, you have scenes where he's doing his usual thing, not playing great defense, putting up shots and trying to draw fouls and then sitting on the floor while the play goes the other way, complaining at the officials. This, I think, is worn thin in LA to an extent already, and I don't think voters like it. And I don't think voters tend to gravitate toward Luka Doncic for some of these awards. At plus 370, it makes sense that he would be there just given the ultimate level of talent. But I don't think that he, as a person, I don't think he's got enough there that's going to sway voters to vote for him. And by the way, don't shoot the messenger. I think that's stupid. But I also think that's part of the dynamic that has held Luka back at times, both in his career, as we have seen, going back to the NBA Finals, if you remember when they were getting smoked by Boston and he pointed at Jason Kidd and told him, you better effing challenge that. I think it was about game 2 or 3 of that series. Brian Windhorst famously chastised him on the court afterward. I think that does hold a guy like Luka Doncic back from getting enough votes to win this award. And by the way, he's already missed time. He's missed 7 games already. That's also something that weighs into this. For those who don't know off the top of their heads, 17 is that benchmark. You miss 17 games, you're not going to qualify because of the 65-game minimum. And maybe, just maybe, as this has been brought up to by a couple of folks, maybe this is finally going to be the end with Nikola Jokic's award of this 65-game minimum that has been established by the NBA over the last couple of years. A lot of people don't like it. You're disqualifying a lot of strong candidates for awards because they're not meeting these 65-game thresholds. And now we have another danger of this MVP just being walked over to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander because there's not going to be enough strong candidates due to the injury that he suffered or that Nikola Jokic has suffered. So there's a lot going on here at this point, and Jokic's injury is going to be huge right now as we move forward in the association. All right, when we come back, we have 4 games tonight in the NBA. We can take a look at those and see where the numbers are at, some of the injury reports as well, and, of course, look ahead to the college football playoff, best bets, and more. We wrap up Money Moves on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming up in 15 minutes, Mitch Moss, Paul Howard will take you from here. Follow the money. Got a great show on tap. Tell you about that coming up. And, of course, Very excited to hear what our boys have in store and for the rest of the programming for today. A couple of last notes. Let's finish up on the association. We'll get some of the bowl games as well coming up in about an hour and 15 minutes. Got kickoff between two good programs that I'm looking forward to in Tennessee and Illinois. But association, as we mentioned, do have a couple of games later today. Let's start with the night game here. Los Angeles Clippers playing host to the Sacramento Kings. Clippers, a 9.5-point favorite or thereabouts against Sacramento. Total in the range of 219.5, 220. And most spots are toggling between that 9.5 and 10 here. Injury report for both teams as we look ahead to tonight. A really clean report outside of John Collins for the Los Angeles Clippers. And on the flip side for Sacramento, do have a couple of notable names. Zach LaVine out. Keegan Murray is going to be questionable to play. Domantas Sabonis remains out as well. Clippers, we brought this up yesterday, but it's worth noting one more time for those who weren't with us. Very quietly, Los Angeles starting to turn things around on the season. They've been a team that really got off to a poor start. Defensively, weren't playing well. But as they head into this, they've won four straight, covered those contests, and are starting to really deliver both on the floor and at the window. Question becomes, how much is too much? At what point do you look at this number for Los Angeles and think that the market is overcorrected? I think you can make the case against a team like Sacramento, which hasn't shown a ton of fight from a straight-up perspective. This is it. But remember, Sacramento, because the market got so far out, actually had a five-game cover streak snapped last time out on the road against the Los Angeles Lakers. Look, this Kings team is in a really bad spot. We're getting some really big numbers against certain opponents as well. This seems like one, though, with L.A. at home in the midst of a homestand. They could potentially get this done. L.A. too quietly. A couple of things have developed for them. Kawhi Leonard is starting to score more. We went over this the other day with his 55-point performance against the Detroit Pistons. Also, with the absence of Ivica Zubac, you've seen Brook Lopez into the starting lineup. It's changed things a little bit. Hit a million threes the other day against the Portland Trailblazers. Spacing the floor out has been a lot better for Harden and for this Clippers offense as a whole. The spacing has been a lot better. The ability to get inside has been a lot better. And so I think it's changed the way this team has played offensively, which has led to this turnaround for the Los Angeles Clippers. I think we're probably right where we're at with Los Angeles Clippers and where it should be. Collins plays is not going to make a huge difference here and would expect that maybe you get a little buyback on Sacramento to the point where this is probably going to close like 9.5 most places. Either way, though, the streak on the line for the Los Angeles Clippers tonight against the Sacramento Kings. And the other game worth mentioning, and this actually ties into an award that we brought up a couple of times here, Boston on the road against Utah tonight. This should be a really fun game. Boston right now sitting is about an 8-point favorite, total of 242.5. Injury report for these two teams as well, as we're going to bring this up. Ace Bailey with that left hip issue, he is out, and Keontae George is ill. He is questionable to play. That is the name that is worth monitoring here for the Jazz both tonight and in the big picture. George has been incredible throughout this season, and he is on an insane run at this point right now for not only most improved, but just for this team in general. I'm going to read you some numbers for Keontae George and what he has done so far. We've talked a lot about his most improved resume. Sam Vecenie the other day called him the most improved player, yet he's still available at 14-1. Keontae George, 24.2 points, 4.2 rebounds, 6.8 assists on 45% shooting from the floor so far this year. He's improved his scoring by 7.4 points per game, his assists by 1.2 points per game. The category in which he has improved the most, and his ability all over the place, the ability to control the ball, his handle, everything has improved. His efficiency has been great. Points per 100 shot attempts. Last year, Keontae George was at 108.9. This year, he's at 121.8. That is a 12.9-point increase. That is by far better than any of the three other, we'll call them, candidates for this award, Denny Avdia, Jalen Johnson, or Jalen Duren. So if he can play tonight, catch an 8.5 with the Utah Jazz, given the way that they have played at home, the upside on offense, I think this could be a fun game. They have been a pain in the rear end for a ton of these teams so far this year. And if you can get Keontae George out there, I think that's going to be pretty big, because Lauri Markkanen not on the injury report for the Utah Jazz today. You get those two out there, and that's going to be one that I think is worth playing. So that'll be an injury worth monitoring later today and see if you can get ahead of the information if Keontae George is going to be available. All right, a couple of bowl games coming up a little bit later today. Let's hit on some of the line moves and where we're at right now for both of these contests so far. Tennessee, Illinois, we get the Music City Bowl. This one opened up 6.5 in favor of Tennessee. We're down to 3 with a total of 63. And in fact, as we speak, some of these spots finally moving off of this 3 and getting to 2.5, juice to the dog side at minus 120. this one's been kind of wild, like with all the bowl games, back and forth and the swings here and there. We saw some spots like Circa. Their line move has not been as dramatic. They were open. They opened 5 with this game and are down to this 3-point spot in favor of the Tennessee Volunteers. It's hard to question motivation and where we're at with some of these contests. I would say, though, that from Illinois, defensively, I think you're going to be up against it here. They've been pretty mediocre throughout 2025. Hitting in the middle of the pack, or they're below there in terms of their efficiency numbers on defense. And one would think against the Volunteers offense that can move the ball the way they can might be something that works against them at this point right now. No real strong opinion. These bowl games, man, they've been a little random. A lot of these line moves we've discussed and some of the steam has been dead wrong. And so you wonder what this effort's going to be like for either of these teams at this point right now. Our other one, USC and TCU. Trojans, a lot of injuries along the offensive line. You do wonder what this is going to look like for USC. This is 4.5 with a total of 56.5, and this offensive line has been pretty beat up. We'll see if they're going to be healthy. But you're talking about right guard, left tackle, center, all guys dealing with injuries at this point for USC. TCU, after a strong start to the year, in which they came onto the national stage and shocked us all, I think that has been a big fall off for them. But I do wonder where this USC program is at, given how ailing they have been, and also some of the names that are not going to be out there at the skill positions as well. Tight end Lake McRee, wide receiver Jacoby Lane, and, of course, wide receiver Mekhi Lemon all aren't going to be out there. Those are key components for this USC team that won't be available. Can't really run to the window and lay 4.5 with USC in this spot against TCU. So let's talk about some best bets. I mentioned this really quickly and do want to expound on it a little bit. And I mentioned this with Frank Schwab, and we talked a little bit about the path that the Los Angeles Rams are going to face at this point. And this is a topic I brought up with Mitch Moss on Pod of the Futures. If you look at where we're at with the market now in terms of odds to win the Super Bowl, the Los Angeles Rams, because of the loss against the Atlanta Falcons, have been knocked off their perch as the favorite to win the Super Bowl. Right now, some spots, it is the Seattle Seahawks, who are currently your favorite to win the Super Bowl at plus 475, followed by the Los Angeles Rams at plus 550. Then you get the AFC, presumed number one seed, Denver Broncos at 7-1, and the 49ers at plus 850. Of course, two of those three teams in the NFC West that I'm discussing will meet on Saturday for the number one seed at stake. But I added the Rams at plus 550 to win the Super Bowl, so we'll talk about this as part of best bets as well. They can still win the 5 seed, which is something it sounds like they want to do. We heard from Sean McVay. In fact, why can we pull that up really quick, the Sean McVay clip? It seems like he is pretty adamant that he wants to play this game in Week 18. Let's hear from McVay. You can hear it in his voice. They're ready to go.
Oh, we're playing. Yeah, they're playing.
Is that because of the...
No, they were going to play anyways. We need to play. We need to play better football. I don't know what the consequences are and those different types of things, but we got to play better.
Interestingly enough, the guy that, as we know, in Week 18 has never really cared has been King Sidamall. I think they kind of understand at this point right now, having lost 3 out of their previous 5 games, that just getting into the postseason with a little bit more in terms of positive play is going to help them out. And given all of the flaws we have seen with the Los Angeles Rams, I think the consistency on offense has been the thing that kind of drives me to believing that they can still be the best team in the National Football League. The common thread amongst some of these losses, there has been 2, 1 positive and 1 negative. For the Rams, you look at this offense, look at the game against the Carolina Panthers, plus 1.6 in net yards per play. They only had 5 third downs and 9 possessions. As Schwab mentioned with us when we were talking about this earlier, they were going up and down the field on one of the best defenses, statistically the second most efficient defense in the NFL. They had 581 total yards against the Seattle Seahawks. They averaged 6.6 yards per play. Stafford was 29-49, 457 yards, had 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. Look, their defense let them down in a really big way. The special teams has been a small issue. If you actually look at these losses for the Los Angeles Rams, the special teams have been a problem for them, but they're still good enough on offense that I think that they can make this run, even having to make multiple road trips in an NFL in which home field advantage, as we've discussed, is not as important. Having said that, if you run into a couple opponents, I actually think Chicago is a sneaky poor matchup for them, considering how well the Bears can run the ball. And if you look at these 3 losses for LA, what's the common thread? 98 attempts, 554 yards, 5.65 yards per attempt for opponents, and they've slipped down to 13th in expected points added per rush by opponents. The run defense can be a problem. But I do think they're good enough on offense if they get this NFC South seed, which I think they can, considering I think the Seahawks are going to win this game on Saturday, that I do believe the Rams are worth adding at plus 550 to win the Super Bowl. So with that, we're all done. Coming up next, Follow the Money. Mitch Moss, Paul Howard, they'll be with you to get you ready for Week 18. Paul Stone's going to deliver his best bets for college football. Then stick around, VSiN Primetime at 7. I'll be cashing out with Dustin Sweetelson at 11. See you tomorrow here on Money Moves.